This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Okay, we're going to jump right in because the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, is kind enough to join us in studio. We're not going to take calls, but I guarantee you I'm going to work in your texts. So if you have questions, you have observations, not just going to be me. You have comments about the city, where we're at in particular, and you want to address those to the mayor, I'm going to look at those periodically throughout this conversation. Jacob's going to be here until about 1:45. Thank you for being here. We were talking off air caucuses last night. How did it play out for you and your team?
They went incredibly well. Look, probably better than we've ever seen our caucuses go before for us. And, I mean, what we're seeing right now is there is a whole lot of movement in the city around recognizing that the opposite of extremism is not the opposite extreme. The opposite of extremism is good, thoughtful governance where you're following the data, you're listening to experts, and you're recognizing that we got to love our city more than our ideology. That is a shift that I have not seen perhaps during my time in political office in full to this extent. And so, we're really optimistic. I don't want to spout off any final numbers before we see them, but yeah, caucuses went really well for us across the city.
We've talked enough that I know that means that's a bit of a reflection on the city council. You and certain members of the city council don't see eye to eye. I'm with you on that. I think there are too many members of the city council who are too far to the left who need to think more about the business side, the practical side. Do you think that part was reflected in the caucuses last night?
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to impart any one theory on the constituents at large, but what was clear is people showed up, and in many cases they showed up in droves, and when you got a whole lot of regular people that are just saying, hey, I want to attend my precinct caucus and I want to spend a few hours on a Tuesday evening, maybe that means you got to get the kid a sitter, maybe that means that you forego what other opportunities you had on that particular night. But when you have that many people that are participating, it says something. And so I want to thank everybody for coming out. Caucusing is kind of a strange process.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you think this is the best way for a city of this size to be narrowing down and highlighting who should be the next mayor of Minneapolis?
No, I don't. And thankfully, we've got a general election in November. By its very nature, the system can be exclusive. If you've got a family, if you're working the night shift, if you don't have the ability to take 3 hours and attend a caucus and then take perhaps a whole day and attend a convention, then it makes it very difficult for people to participate in this DFL endorsement process. And so is it the best way? No, of course not. I think I've said that before. It is cool when you have people coming out nonetheless because they care so deeply about the city.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk overall. You're about to finish your second term. You'd like to have a third term. Let's talk in that way. Tell me, let's just try two, because I know it can't be just one, but and I know you could go on. Tell me the two best things that you've done as the mayor, and tell me the two things that you would like over again if you had that chance.
That's a great question. Well, first I'll tell you, we are nationally recognized as having the best housing policy in the entire country. We're producing 8.5 times the amount of deeply affordable housing since before I took office. We have seen the ability to keep rents in check more than virtually any city in the entire country. And the progress that we are making is really an example of so many other cities to follow. I know because mayors in those cities ask us about what we are doing in the area of housing. Safety. Look, safety has to be a top priority for any mayor. It is our top priority right now. And, you know, for years, we have heard people ask for a police department that looked like the rest of the city. In other words, was beautifully diverse.
Yep.
We've heard people say that they wanted officers to be, you know, living in the community or deeply committed to it. And I'm looking at these new recruits that are coming in, the new community safety officers that are coming in. And I'm so proud to say that that thing that people wanted is happening. It is literally happening. We are increasing the numbers in the MPD right now. Applications are 133% up. And these officers that are coming in, they want to be part of the change and they want to get in on that ground level. And by the way, crime is down dramatically in virtually every single category. I mean, the North Side hasn't been safer in well over a decade.
Your last homicide was February 15th.
Yeah. This is a knock on wood kind of thing. Everybody do it. Everybody do it.
Yep. And again, it's longest stretch since 2017. Do you want that to keep going? Of course.
Of course.
Right? But that is a distinctive change from over the last 8 years.
Yeah, I know people, when I tell people, hey, we haven't had a homicide on record since February 15th. It seems as it's coming out of my mouth like that's a kind of low bar, you know, because we're talking about somebody that just got killed.
Yep.
That being said, these are the kinds of calls that I have to field as mayor in the middle of the night when somebody's son just got shot and killed, when an innocent bystander just got hit by a bullet. And so the fact that we haven't seen a homicide since then is a really big deal. And good Lord, everybody, please knock on wood, because we want to see that trend continue.
Okay, the two things that if you could do over again, you would.
I mean, there's so many things that I, in retrospect, could have done differently. One of the big ones that we have dramatically improved on is how we run emergency management. You know, we in the city have had no shortage of emergencies, crises over the last several years. COVID-19, the murder of George Floyd, the subsequent unrest. And what we did, I believe it was last year, is we took all of our city leadership out to like the FEMA headquarters. There's a retreat that you go on where FEMA puts you through an entire simulation where you practice experiencing an emergency and how collectively everybody responds to it. You know, you use the National Incident Management System. You make sure the communication lines are in place. And, you know, look, any emergency, you can always get overwhelmed. And that does happen, whether it's a wildfire or unrest. But you want to make sure that you're doing things right. And, you know, the good thing is we've made a lot of the corrections. And I think I've told you this, Chad. Like, I'm not the same mayor as I was when I first took office. I'm not the same person. Yes, of course, I've learned lessons that have made me a better mayor and a better leader. And I use those experiences every single day. And what I would argue to people is right now, more than ever, with all the chaos that's happening with the Donald Trump presidency and everything beyond, that kind of experience matters. And so I'm going to do it. I'm running for one more term here. This will be the last term because I want to use that experience to help the city. I want to get the job done, and I'll gladly hand off the reins to the next mayor.
Okay, so part of that is George Floyd. And we've talked George Floyd a lot, the two of us, on air, off air. For the objective person, not the person who disagrees with you right from the get-go and doesn't want to listen to ideas, but the objective person who still looks back and says, that just should have been handled immensely better, and holds that against you. And this is a person who's going to vote and is an objective person. What do you say to that person?
Well, first, I don't blame them, because if I was looking at this from the outside, I would also say to myself, man, what could we have done better? I say that to myself anyway. What could we have done better?
What is that?
And, well, you know, here's the thing. I'm sure there was a lot of stuff that could have been improved. Certainly the improved use of the National Incident Management System, as I mentioned, improved yep. lines of communication, obviously all that. But here is also the truth. Even had we done everything perfectly, we still would be talking about this today as a big problem. Even if we had done everything perfectly, this was still a confluence, a perfect storm of a whole lot of different stuff.
It may not have lasted as long, though, right? If there would have been better coordination between you and the state?
Yeah, well, yeah, we've been through that. I mean, we did ask for it immediately. And yeah. We've talked
That's
about
been documented.
This before. It's been yep. pretty well documented. I asked for it immediately. But, yeah, of course, you can always improve things on that realm. And at the same time, the difficulty that we were dealing with was pretty extensive. It's not like there was one incident in one place. Oftentimes, you know, yep. when a bridge collapses, you got one incident in one place for the most part. This was hundreds of incidents all around the city at the same time. And that's what made it so unbelievably difficult. But look, you improve. You find ways to make sure that not just the mayor, but the entire enterprise is ready to respond as best they can. And then it's not just to unrest. I mean, we've got issues of climate change that are occurring that could have an impact on, for instance, whether our pipes burst or not. We have all sorts of other issues that are happening around the world. We've got these tariffs that are coming through that could have a massive impact on people's income and their ability to afford groceries.
Yep.
And so there are many potential emergencies that can come down the pike here, and we have to be nimble and be prepared.
Let's pause right here. We'll look at some of your texts. Remind folks, we talked to Jacob about this just a little bit. The president, about an hour ago, announced that they're raising the tariffs to China to 125%, 90-day pause, everyone else, so then it goes back just a 10% tariff on all the other countries and isolating China. The market has responded very favorably. The Dow is up 2,500 points. You have a comment, question for the mayor? We'll look at those through text. 651-461-9226.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, we're back with the mayor, Jacob Frey. Let's talk homeless. Let's talk the numbers and the improvement in that area and the fact that a couple of your political opponents for the upcoming race are still mad at you
yeah.
about this. Talk about how the numbers, what was it, 1.300, now we're down in the 30s? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, we're seeing a drastic improvement, and I need to be specific here, in unsheltered homelessness. We're seeing all sorts of positive trends now, and what is clear is we need to keep that momentum going. As of last year, we had somewhere between 250 and 300 people experiencing unsheltered homelessness. And by unsheltered, I mean not in a shelter, so largely in encampments.
Yep.
And as of this last week, we were hovering around 25. And so 250 to 300 then, 25 now. And I'll add, we had encampments that were as large as like 100 people.
Yep.
And as of right now, the largest encampment that we're aware of is around 3. And so, yeah, I'll tell you what we've done. One, we have been connecting more and more people in our shelter system and experiencing homelessness into stable homes. I believe it was around 2,500 people last year, and that was largely the work of Hennepin County and the partnerships that we have with them. Two, we've got a homeless response team. It's around 5 to 6 individuals that will go out and offer any service that could possibly be needed, housing, shelter, addiction treatment, culturally sensitive care, like the kind of wraparound services that people need. And yes, more people are accepting shelter than before. And so that's a really positive trend. We've expanded our partnership in the work with Hennepin County, and they're the social service provider, and they're doing a great job, and we're really proud to work with them. And then the final thing is we're preventing these homeless encampments from forming from the beginning, and our police are helping to make sure that as these things start to get set up, we say, no, we're not doing this. And that's predominantly some of the activists that were setting up yurts to set up the homeless encampments, largely in low-income neighborhoods and cutting through fences to make it happen. And we've talked about this. The truth is these encampments are not safe either for the people living in them or for the surrounding neighborhoods. And so I know that this has been some real welcomed progress in these neighborhoods in that in those areas, 911 calls and 311 calls have dropped by almost 80%. There's been an almost 80% decline in those 911 and 311 calls. And so we're hearing from people that the improvement is welcomed. Look, we need to keep that trend going. We need to keep getting people in homes and in shelter.
The President of the United States made immigration a huge part of his first administration, running for office, when he was running for re-election this time, and clearly it has been a huge part of the first 100 days or so. You recently talked about this again, it's far from the first time, but you used the term safe haven for illegal immigrants. Do you stand by that phrase, and do you think people took that the wrong way? What does that mean?
So let me explain specifically what we have in Minneapolis, because there's a lot of discussion around sanctuary city, what constitutes a sanctuary city, what does it mean?
And some people feeling, and I want you to explain, that the city's not as safe because it's a sanctuary city, and also threats from the administration that they're going to go after sanctuary cities.
That's right. So what we have in Minneapolis is called a separation ordinance. And what that ordinance says is that our cops, our public officials, will not ask the question as to whether an individual is documented or not. And because they haven't asked the question, we haven't gathered any information about their documentation status. And because we haven't gathered any information, when Donald Trump or anybody else asks us for all of our information, our answer is quite simple, which is we don't have any.
Yep.
And so to that extent, in that realm, we're not cooperating with ICE. Look, in Minneapolis, they're not illegal aliens. They're our neighbors. I mean, a lot of these people have been here for a long time, longer than I've been here. They've got families. They've got jobs. They've got businesses. They're working their tails off for the betterment of our city, and we love them for it.
What do you say to the person listening right now who believes that the police department should be asking for documentation on arrest?
I respectfully disagree with them. Our police officers have a lot of very important work to be doing. I'd far rather them concentrate their efforts on keeping this record going or near record without a homicide.
Yeah.
We want to prevent people from dying. We want to prevent shootings from taking place. We want to continue to drive down these violent crime numbers because, I mean, that's the data that I'm looking at every day, and that's what I want our officers focusing on. And I'll tell you, they're doing a great job at it.
We're downtown,
yeah,
and we talk a lot about workers downtown. We've talked a lot about changing buildings and what's going on. The building right across the street has went through some changes. We also watch a lot of politicians. Donald Trump's talked about it. Gavin Newsom's talked about it. Governor Walz has talked about it. We're putting a major push on employees and businesses to come back. Where are you at on the balance of encouraging versus incentivizing, punishing, in getting more people down here?
So we have a whole lot of work to do to make sure that those numbers continue to trend up. But every week they are. We're hovering somewhere around 70% of the downtown workforce is coming in, you know, a couple times a week. And I think that we're going to get that number up to 80 or even 85%. And we got to be realistic here. We're not going to get it back up to 100.
Yep.
And so the question is, what do you do with that remaining 15 to 20%?
Yep.
And we've talked about this, which is we got to convert the space. A lot of it, especially these older pre-World War II buildings, can be converted from commercial or office space into residential. If you go over to the warehouse district, there's a whole bunch of them that are presently offices that are in some cases vacant. And so what if we were to make them residential units? And you take the workers and the businesses from those spots and put them in some of these taller glass sleek skyscrapers that will never be transitioned
to
residential.
Can I ask you about that?
You can.
So what are we going to do about that? That some of these buildings that are right near us, right here on the Central Core, which look gorgeous, but because of plumbing, because of windows, they're never going to work.
That's right.
And they're not going to be as busy as they once were. Are we going to see some of these buildings get knocked down?
The first step is, again, to look at those older buildings, the pre-World War II ones, because those are the buildings that are most conducive for the shift. These are buildings where you can open a window, and people generally like to have fresh air in places where they live. These are buildings where the floor plate is more conducive to a shift to a residential unit. And so that's kind of the low-hanging fruit that we need to target first. With, yes, a combination of subsidy, and we're trying to get a bill approved over at the state capitol right now, even tax incremental financing at the city level. So we want to expedite this so that we can punch through this ring of fire to get people downtown to get the valuations of these buildings back up. I think some of the buildings that you're mentioning, the sleek glass ones, yeah, you're right. They're not going to become residential. It just doesn't work for that.
No,
and so how much of them can we get filled with the people that were previously in the older pre-World War II buildings? That's the first question. And yeah, I mean, is it possible that a demo could take place? It certainly is. And I think we need to sort of be open to a next phase of how downtown looks. If we've got way more residential units, of course, that means more people are living here. If more people are living here, wouldn't some of them want a park nearby, some green space where they can hang out and can gain a little bit of respite from a busy city life? And so there is a whole next phase to how downtown functions. And a lot of it is going to be, yes, residential. And by the way, that's already the case. We've got more people living downtown Minneapolis than the entire city of Edina.
Yeah.
Which
a lot of people don't realize.
They don't. There's tons of people that are here, and more people want to move here like every day. The demand is pretty high.
You just need more downtown and not everybody wanting to live in North Loop, right? That North Loop area is massive. Let me do this. I want you to comment on that, but I want to pause here so we don't get too far behind. We know your time's short. I'm working in texts that are coming at 651-461-9226. I want to talk a little Stretch Lab right here. Jacob Fry, he's a runner. He's fit. He could use Stretch Lab. Stretch Lab, 11 locations. Listen, he's in better shape than me. I need Stretch Lab more than him. Why did you have to say that? I have feelings. I'm right here.
I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah, 11 locations. How about if you're a runner like Jacob? How about if you're a golfer like me? How about if, what do you do? Do you do anything physical?
Do stuff.
You do stuff?
Yeah.
You know, you got tight glutes, tight hamstrings?
What do
you got?
About my glutes.
I went to glutes for some reason right away. StretchLab.com. I've been going there since 2019. I go there. My son Quentin goes there. I see people of all ages. And the first visit, if you listen to this show, which you are right now, and you go to StretchLab.com, is half off. Feel better. Hit that drive a little further. Run a little faster. StretchLab.com. Okay, let's talk Target Center. We've talked about this a couple times before. But Glenn Taylor said uncle now, right? And so it'll be approved fairly soon where Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie, they're in charge, okay? They want a new arena, okay? Everything I've heard is they want downtown. I hear International Market Square. I hear the possibility of Target Center. I hear some prominent companies that build arenas that they want to work with. I think they know it's an incredibly hard challenge with the city. If they're pursuing an arena, will the city play any part in the financing in any way?
Not in the financing. We're not subsidizing an arena. What we will certainly play a part in is helping to make sure that that new arena is a massive success, and that success takes place in downtown Minneapolis. That is clearly the best place for it. And so obviously we would want to work with the new ownership structure and the Timberwolves to make sure we can get something that is truly successful for them and, of course, for the city as well. But if the question is are we going to publicly subsidize an arena itself, the answer is no.
So if they – and it's clear they want to stay downtown, and I agree with you 100%. It's by far the best place for it. But they find a suburb that is offering them a great deal, and there is financing in some way, and they come to you and say, we want something, and they can tangibly show you what they have. It's 100% a no?
Well, we got to be operating in reality here, and the reality is that there is just such centrifugal force behind downtown. There's a reason to be downtown. The infrastructure is set up to be downtown. The light rail and the business locations and the bars and the entertainment.
I agree with all that, but what if they buy a lot of land?
I mean,
in the suburbs?
We're not going to publicly subsidize an arena is the answer that I think you're looking for. But like, there's a number of other things that, of course, we can do to help and to make sure that it is a big success. And we want to make sure that this works for, again, the Timberwolves. We want to make sure that this works for the city. While I won't get into specifics, I do think that there's a number of really great options. And, you know, the closer that we can have it right into that downtown core or the warehouse district generally, I think there is a massive opportunity to really recreate a full-on entertainment district.
Okay, so if it's not at the Target Center location, if it's not International Market Square, where else could the arena be?
Well, I knew you were going to ask that question, and I'm not going to answer
because I alluded to it.
It was totally my fault. Yeah, I screwed this one up. But here's the bottom line. Yeah, I mean, as soon as
I
start talking.
Nick Holter raised City Center.
Yeah, Nick had a good idea there, obviously. I mean, that particular spot would be great for activation of Nicollet Mall.
Yeah.
But there's a number of other parcels as well that I think could work quite well. Could generate the kind of entertainment district that we ultimately want to see. Am I going to start naming parcels off, though? No, because you know as well as I do, as soon as you start doing that, the price gets jacked.
That's true. So, but you've spent some time studying those possibilities.
Yes, I have.
Okay. Nicollet Mall.
Yeah.
I'm down here. I work down here. When am I going to see a different Nicollet Mall?
So what we want to see is a pedestrianized Nicollet Mall.
Right.
To get a pedestrianized Nicollet Mall, it's not just enough to get the buses off. We got to get people on. And that means activation. That means programming. That also means that we're changing up how the streetscape on Nicollet Mall works so that it's far more entertaining. It's more experiential if you're coming in to shop. The era of remember there was a Sports Authority over there and the Barnes and Noble.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a lot of nostalgia that's attached to the Daytons and maybe a little less so the Macy's, but nostalgia. That era of the massive square footage entity is dead. And it's dead in virtually every city throughout
Dayton's
the country.
Project, what's happened with that is another affirmation, right?
I think that can really succeed. And I think that there's
No,
it's not yet. But I think there's a number of other parcels along that drag where if we broke up the space, changed it from like a 10 or 15,000 square foot single retail unit to 5-3,000 square foot units, well, suddenly you've got a whole lot of small local entrepreneurs that can pay the rent, whereas for the big space, they would have no chance. And if you have a smaller frontage right on the street, what you allow for is when you're walking down the block, you can pass by 5 or 6 or 8 different small and locally owned joints. You see this in other cities.
Yep, you do.
You go to New York, you go to Paris, wherever. It works.
So is that 5 years from now? Is that 10 years from now? When do we see some of this happening?
Well, you know, I can't mandate that the private building owners break up their space.
Right.
But we can't help.
But until you get the buses off, a lot of that isn't even going to get started. So how realistic is it to get the buses off fairly soon?
I think it's realistic to get the buses off, at least on a temporary basis, on a routine basis, where a lot of these outdoor cafes, for instance, know that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, there's no buses.
Okay.
And now that's not I'm just making that up as an idea, but I think that is absolutely something
that
could happen.
Did he make that up, or is that an idea that they thought about?
I think he said it's already happening.
It's happening. Yeah, this weekend it's happening.
Okay, three last points quick, and I'll let you go. Uptown. When I was in my 20s and early 30s, I was in Uptown constantly. It was fun. It was loud. It was great people watching. It's a shell of itself. I have someone related to me who means everything to me who lives right there in Uptown. I, as much as any person on the planet, wants Uptown to be safe and viable and visible and vibrant. It's not right now. What can we do to start bringing that back?
Safety and small and local businesses. It's the reality of safety. It's the perception of safety. People need to walk down the street and feel comfortable and safe. Yes, we need to be supporting these small and local businesses that are taking the leap of faith to get in there. Uptown has been hit harder than any other neighborhood in the city, in the last 5 or so years. There was a slew of different things that happened, culminating as most recently with massive construction.
Yep.
Now, I stand by the construction. It was completely essential. That street hadn't been redone in like 50 years. And if we didn't want a massive main line or a pipe to burst and then tons of flooding, we had to do it now. It was essential. Now, the first phase of that construction is finished. The street from 26 down to Lake is opened up again.
Yep.
And I'll tell people two things that I'll promise for this year. I first will promise that you will see the buds of progress happening this year.
What does that mean?
I think you'll see some small and local businesses open up. I think you'll see some new creative ideas that come to the forefront. You'll see people that are looking to creatively invest in Uptown.
Okay.
So the buds of progress you will start to both see and hear about this year.
Yep.
And this is the second promise.
Yeah.
It's not going to be everything that you want to see all at once.
Okay.
And so you will not be satisfied. And so it's going to be coming back, but it won't be everything, one big burst, all at once. And here's the ask that I've got. When those small and local businesses do open, good God, go to them. You know, buy stuff at them.
Right.
And I don't mean just like one time and you feel like you've done your
Make it a part of the consideration.
Make it a part of your regular day basis. Make them a success, and the success will breed more success. And so we've all got to pitch in here to really support them. And I do think that progress will be afoot.
Light rail is nowhere near as safe as it once was. How much of that is on you versus on the folks who run the day-to-day of light rail?
Well, light rail has got substantially better over the last year and a half or so. Of course, it still has a ways to go. That's a Metro Transit operation. It was run through the Met Council. I will say that they've been working very, very hard, though, on improving the safety on the light rail, and I've seen some of the numbers, and it does show some improvement.
You want to win. You may win. You're the favorite right now. But strange things happen. Have you thought about if you lose, what you would do?
You know, I don't think you do a kind of plan B when you're running for mayor or really any other position. You kind of have to just be all in. I mean, look, we expect that the outcome will be positive. We're feeling all kinds of momentum. In fact, I think the caucuses probably went better for us than they ever have before when I've been running for mayor. You know, and at the same time, man, life goes on. You know, this is my final run for mayor. This will be my last term and last 4-year period.
But if you win, you're not eliminating another office, are you?
No, I well, the most likely scenario is I'll probably be done with politics altogether. I mean, of course, I could change my mind.
Okay, so if you win, you're saying this is it?
If I win and I run for mayor this last time, the most likely scenario at this point will be that I hand the reins off to the next mayor. I want to make sure that the city is in a great place, that the trajectory is where we need it to be. I want to use the experiences that I've garnered to make sure that they take those reins and they feel good about leading. So the question was for another office. As of right now, I'd say no. Of course, I could change my mind. But, you know, I think service, public service, is not going to be a lifetime job for me.
Yep.
I will always be involved in service. I will always be involved in community work. But am I going to spend my entire life running for office? The answer is no. I mean, you know, again, could I change my mind and get the wild hair and get really excited about something? Of course, you know, I'm a human being. But standing here today, no, that's probably not the direction.
I could use a better producer.
Number three. Yeah, I think I can help you out there.
Good
maybe.
Luck getting one.
Yeah.
Whoa. Uncle. Thank you. The mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, right down here. I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Let's pause. 49 past 1 on CCO. The greatest sporting event on planet Earth begins tomorrow. We have had a working relationship with Jack William Nicklaus for about a decade. And we had received reports earlier that Jack, now 85, might be tired of us. Might have moved on. But guess what happened? I think euphoric off last night's Champions Dinner. They had the Champions Dinner.
Yeah. Heard it was really good, too.
Jack was there. Looked like a meal out of Applebee's to me. Come on, Scott.
That's what Scotty does.
Come on. I mean, go to Chili's. Come on. Let's freshen it up a little bit. And Sliders. I mean, come on.
Nothing wrong with Sliders?
Yeah.
You're such an elitist.
Yeah. When you go to Champs, I mean, I'm all for I like Sliders.
When Champs. Good 90s reference.
Exactly. When you're the Masters champion and you're at Pompousville Central. By the way, if anybody from Augusta's listening, that was Dave. I didn't
no,
say
no,
that.
No, no, no,
I'd
no, no.
Love to get back there again. I'd run you over in a car 10 times to get back there.
You'd do that for a lot less than that.
I would, actually. A lot less. Either way, while we're chatting with the mayor of Minneapolis, Jack Nicklaus, I don't know if he's still in Augusta or he's now down back to Palm Beach, but Jack sent us his first Masters memory. We normally play them Thursday and Friday. We're going to whet your appetite right here. Whet away, Dave. Whet your appetite right now.
Jack Nicklaus remembers the Masters.
Oh, so good already.
People ask me all the time, Jack, what are the more surprising moments from the annual Champions Dinner?
Perfect.
Well, that's an easy one, and one that happens every year. It's when I walk in the room and see Trevor Immelman. I mean, how the hell did he win a green jacket?
I mean, it's a good question. A lot of people have been asking for years, right?
It's fair. You know, what are one of your surprises? I mean, are you serving us? I mean, what the hell are you doing here? Pretty good.
Yes. Thank you, Jack. I really appreciate Jack coming through again this year. I never doubted him. I know you did. You've been very down on Jack. Ever since he gave Don the club championship trophy, you've been very down on him.
No way. He's my guy. He's the closest thing I ever had to a sporting hero. He's my guy. I, again, for an hour on Saturday, watched the 1986 Masters.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you at all.
I'm sure you know it shot by shot, hole by hole, exactly where every ball is end up.
I've watched it, I'm not kidding, and just get the nerd alert going all over the place. I've watched well over 100 times.
It's the cook with Star Wars is you with Jack and the Masters.
Well, an 86 Masters.
Well, yes.
The 1986 Masters should be a national holiday. And if you're not aroused by the 1986 Masters, lose my number. That's what I have to say.
Okay.
Lose my number. You know who never loses my number? Susan K. Jones. Susie and CBS next.